girl, she gets what she wants all the time, 'cause she's fine. But for an angel, she's a hot, hot mess. Make you so blind, but you don't mind, 'cause she's an uptown, get around, anything goes, a girl.
This was supposed to be a female cover of this song, Maggie, I promise, but here we are.
That's all right on ya.
It's a good tune to kick us off this very cold Wednesday afternoon show. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther. Welcome, everybody. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You can join us for the conversation this afternoon, 844-967-2789. Couple of programming notes before we get into things. You're not going to want to miss Civic Media's own Jimmy Koska this Thursday, tomorrow, who's going to join our show to talk about the state education conference that is going on today until Friday here in Milwaukee. We'll be talking all things education. We are also going to be joined tomorrow by also Civic Media's friend, Terry Barr, who's going to be sharing with us what is local and overlooked in the news this week. Then next Tuesday, we're going to have Princeton professor Catherine Eden. On Wednesday next week, Joanna Fratchek talking about immigration, what it's like to be a lawyer, what it's like to immigrate, all of those good things. Certainly seems to be a bit of a topic of conversation these days, especially on Capitol Hill. And then this is a little bit over a month out, but you're not going to want to miss this. I've got the CEO of Girl Scouts for Southeastern Wisconsin joining us, Anna Simpson, on Tuesday, February 27th. Friend of mine, she's going to become a friend of the show. That should be a really exciting conversation. And today, we're going to talk about a couple of things, see what grabs everybody's attention. But I would have been quite remiss if I did not start with the fact that quite an important set of oral arguments were happening today before the Supreme Court. And they were arguing about the Chevron deference standard, which we covered on our show, I believe the second week, just earlier last week on the Maggie Dawn Show. So if you want to take a listen on that, you can go to the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. Go check out the list of shows. You can see my prior shows. It dovetails with coverage that I did about mid-December on the Supreme Court's shadow docket. And basically, the expansion of the power of not just the Supreme Court, but courts in general, federal courts specifically. In other words, we're seeing more and more court intervention into the regulatory structure that helps ensure quality of life for all in the United States. And they're doing that with more alacrity, more frequency, with greater audaciousness, I will. That's what took Mifepristone off the market one night, you know, back in April before anybody knew what was happening. The Supreme Court put it back on the market a couple of weeks ago. Shouldn't be like that, should it? I think we should have some reasonable expectations about what can we rely on. And so I just thought it was so essential for me to talk about this Chevron standard again today. And I want to explain a little bit about what happened today before the Supreme Court. But just as a quick recap, the Chevron doctrine is a legal standard that was established in the 1980s in a Supreme Court case. And it is the standard by which courts are supposed to review federal regulations. So Congress will adopt, for example, the Clean Air Act, but they can't possibly specify every possible pollutant under the sun when they adopted the Clean Air Act way back in the, somebody will text in and tell me exactly when that was adopted, but I think in the 60s, early 70s. And so what the Chevron Doctrine says is that the administrative arm of government, the executive branch, comprised of a bunch of agencies, can promulgate rules. And there are rules about rulemaking, and there's a note and comment period. But that once an agency adopts a rule or engages in an enforcement action to ensure that businesses and others are following the regulations, if that's challenged in court, The Chevron doctrine establishes a two-part test that dictates whether or not that regulation or enforcement action will be overruled by the court. And the first step in that inquiry asks, is the congressional statute clear about whatever the question is that's being addressed? So take some clean air or water regulation. If the congressional legislation, if the congressional statute is exactly clear and says exactly what that pollutant level can and cannot be, then that's it. There's nothing for the regulatory agency to do. And the inquiry has to end. If it's not in line with exactly what the statute said and the statute's clear, the regulation gets overruled. But if the statute that was adopted by Congress is unclear or ambiguous, courts reviewing rules promulgated by agencies must defer to the federal agency regulation so long as it's reasonable. Okay, so that's the Chevron standard in a nutshell. Now, whatever we may think about the regulatory state, and that phrase gets thrown around a lot, and I just want to peel that off just for a second. There are a couple of things about regulations that I think wherever we may land on the political spectrum, everybody should agree with. In other words, the principles that should motivate how regulations occur. They shouldn't swing around a bunch depending on who happens to be in the White House. Right? They shouldn't be an artifact of political preference, which means the wonks and the nerds and the people that spend their entire lives studying a particular area of science or whatever it may be, medicine, immunology, if you will. That, you know, I don't think a politician should be telling an immunologist that they don't know enough about immunology and the politician decides. Or for that matter, a judge who also may not have expertise in that area. So we don't like to see the rules and regulations changing just because the political winds have changed. We want to see some steadiness, because that's good for all of us. We know what to expect. We know what the rules are. We talked a bit about that yesterday. It's also good for business. If businesses know what the rules are, they know the standards that they will be held accountable to, and it's not whiplashing all around. That sort of reliance on the state of the rules and good process and that they won't be politicized, that is actually good for business. Business likes certainty. It likes predictability. Markets like certainty and predictability. Those are all good things. And by the way, regulations are basically everything that we interact with on a daily basis. The easiest ones are the air we breathe, the water we drink, swim in, play in. But the roads, how big are the roads? How wide are they? What sort of safety features do they have to have? That's all regulation. And generally, it helps ensure a certain quality of life. It also helps ensure that business A and business B are competing under the same set of rules. That's good. We want fairness. We want fair play. As I've talked about before, one of the things that's concerning then is, well, if it's not the Chevron standard that we're going to evaluate rules by, then what is the standard? Because I don't really want unelected judges becoming a super legislature, right? That's something we've heard from conservatives, and to a degree, I agree with them. So the question before the Supreme Court today, in two separate cases that were basically argued together before the court, was should the Chevron rule stand? Should that continue to be the law of the United States? 844-967-2789. Do you think regulators should be deferred to? I want to know what you think. If there's a reason, there has to be, they get into, like, you have to have a reasonable scientific basis, and they sort of analyze the process by which the rule was adopted and all. Let's assume all that's correct. Do you think it should be left to the regulators to make those rules, except where it is very clearly going beyond whatever grant of authority was in the original congressionally adopted statute? And if you don't believe regulators should have as much power as they do with this deferential standard, that if the rule they put out, if the enforcement action is reasonable, courts won't displace it, what should the alternative be? I want to hear from you. 844-967-2789, because that is the question that the Supreme Court today is grappling with. And I'm going to share with you some of the arguments and questions that some of the justices asked, because it gets us into a weird slipstream. At the end of the day, Justice Gorsuch was actually saying that this extraordinary power in the hands of regulators actually hurts women and people of color and immigrants, which I found to be sort of an interesting moment. Here's Justice Gorsuch, who in other cases seemed very unmoved and unconcerned with the plight of groups that have been traditionally kept out of seats of power in our country. But here, when it comes to Chevron, he seems concerned. And I guess one of my questions to you all is, somebody's got to decide what the rules are. And Congress cannot perfectly legislate in these areas. So where there are gaps, who should decide? Should it be experts within the agencies, or should it be individual judges with no subject matter expertise? Or how would we change the rules to help guide courts to limit, maybe to allow them to examine the rules or the regulations more robustly, but wouldn't allow judges without expertise to simply insert their preference in lieu of what experts at regulatory agencies have enacted? What do you think the standard should be? Who should be deciding? How do we review that? What's going to work best for the vast majority of us? I'm a bit of a Kantian utilitarian in that regard. This case and this question will have more direct impact on everyone's quality of life that is listening today than anything that Donald Trump said today. I promise you that. It is that important. It's the most important thing that happened today in the entire legal political sphere, and a lot was going on. We're going to talk more about this when we come back. I certainly want to hear from you, as I always do. 844-967-2789. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on another cold afternoon here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Like, I'm a little untrusting when I think that the truth is gonna hurt you. And I don't know why you couldn't just stay with me. You couldn't stand to be near me when my face don't seem to want to shine. Cause it's a little bit dirty. Welcome back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. I'm here with Anya. Esther, if you give us a call, be sure that you say hello to Anya and thank her for all of her great work making me sound good and helping us to have great discussions here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you want to join our discussion about regulations, how do we know if we've got enough? Who demands regulations? How do we know if a regulation is working? You know, we've heard partisans on both the left and the right over many years say, you know, oh, I just, let's wipe them all out. Well, except for the ones that work, whose job is it in government to decide which regulations are working? And by the way, just like my discussion that we had in mid-December about the Supreme Court shadow docket, the answer here, in my view, and then we're going to go to the phones. Everybody's welcome today. I don't care which angle you're coming at this from, because this matters to all of us. Business owners, small business owners, corporate CEOs, people that work in the financial sector. That's a regulated sector. This matters to everybody. 844-967-2789. Matters way more than Trump and the E. Jean Carroll case, though that was despicable today. Matters more than the crazy stuff that Donald Trump says, or what Nikki Haley says to not challenge him, or what she doesn't say, right? This matters, and it will matter for decades, most likely, because this won't come back before the court for quite some time. So again, think about it. Who demands regulations? Who decides when we've got enough? Who's testing whether or not they work? If you don't like activist judges, then this should concern you. This should concern you. So very, very briefly, just, and then we're going to go to the phones. We will get there. If you're on the line, stay there. If you want to join the conversation, 844-967-2789. The interesting thing was back in 1984 when Chevron was decided, it was actually conservative causes that were championing the Chevron standard at the time. But that script has now flipped. The Koch network is sort of part of the movement that has led to these cases. The term sort of coined within Charles Koch's network is the war on the administrative state, generally defined as trying to weaken the federal agency bureaucracy, the deep state, right? That interprets laws, crafts federal rules, and implements an executive vision. Again, I ask you, if it's not the subject matter experts, who is it? Because judges are generalists. Here's a couple quotables. Neil Gorsuch, very, very skeptical. He leans into the idea that it seems that the regulations change a good bit depending on who is president. And he says that that's not good. Wouldn't the solution then be for Congress to act if there is a regulation that is adopted that they don't agree with? That was the solution I proposed to the Supreme Court's power grab, which has exploded in the last decade beyond anything that we've ever seen in history. Congress needs to act. And then here was Gorsuch's exact quote, Chevron has this disparate impact on different classes of persons. He said that Chevron rarely benefits immigrants, veterans seeking benefits, or people applying for disability benefits who lack the power to influence agencies during the rulemaking process. Well, isn't the solution then that Congress should improve the rulemaking process so that historically disenfranchised and disempowered groups actually have a seat at the table when regulations might affect them? Seems odd that Neil Gorsuch, sort of newly concerned about these historically disenfranchised groups. Here's Brett Kavanaugh today. The reality of how this works is Chevron itself ushers in shocks to the system every 4 or 8 years when a new administration comes in. Whether it's communications law, he's talking about net neutrality there, by the way, which flip-flopped between the Obama and Trump administrations and now the Biden administration, which is not good. The flip-flopping isn't good. But why is the solution, if you want stability, if you want known rules, why is the solution to cede that power from experts and give it to unelected judges? That one baffles me. Because I agree with Justice Gorsuch and Justice Kavanaugh. We want stable systems of rules. Those are good for people because we know what to expect. It's also good for business. And regulations should do that. They should make things better for everybody. And it all should also enable fair competition and business growth. Because that's also good for most of us most of the time. Chief Justice John Roberts noted that it has been several years since the Supreme Court even invoked Chevron. And wondered if Chevron has basically been, quote, overruled in practice, even if we've had to leave it to the lower courts to continue to grapple with it. Huh. I'm not sure what that means. Generally speaking, conservatives have taken the position that judges shouldn't be legislating. And if there's a problem with legislation, the solution should come from the legislature. Why is that not the answer here? And again, to me, this was all part of a whole. It ties in to my criticisms of the Supreme Court and its shadow docket. Generally speaking, branches of government will continue to try to amass power until checked by another branch. There's all sorts of Federalist Papers, which I'm sure my friend Mark from Prairie du Sac will be able to cite to me. Why do we then allocate the power to set the rules to unelected judges? Whether you're a business owner or a CEO or a veteran or someone who's disabled, that should be concerning. Because judges, as we've seen, especially those justices, tends to be pretty hard to hold them accountable. They're appointed for life in the federal court system. Now, to just put it in contrast, we're going to then take a couple of important messages. We're going to go to the phones because I want to hear from you. Who should be deciding how to fill the gaps when Congress doesn't enact statutes that are sufficiently specific to achieve their purpose? That's what we're talking about. That's what the executive branch of government does. Here's what Justice Kagan said. She pointed out that Congress often intentionally leaves interpretive gaps in legislation, and that judges should know what they don't know. But she expressed concern that judges seem to be abandoning that precept and inserting themselves into matters often of life and death, where they, frankly, have zero expertise at all. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I want to know what you think. Who should be filling in the gaps when Congress leaves gaps in legislation? Unelected judges or experts that work, yes, at regulatory agencies? I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esser. We'll be back after these important messages on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us, 844-967-2789.
Yeah. I eat bars like you for breakfast. Where's my salt and pepper now? Oregano, basil, and thyme. And my tapatio.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esser. You can join our conversation this last half hour of our show, 844-967-2789. Got to plug the survey. It is up. It is live. It is in the show notes. You go to civicmedia.us. You go check out the shows. You go find any of my show notes starting yesterday. The link to the survey to tell me what you want me to talk about this year is there. I really, really want to hear from you. I can't emphasize this enough. I would very much appreciate it if everybody who's on the line now, after you get off the phone, telling everybody what you think about this, go check out that survey and tell me what you want to have Anya and I grapple with in 2024. I also ask you what you don't want to hear me talk about or what you'd like to hear me talk about less. I ask about guests. So lots of places for input. I really do want to hear from you because this ain't about me. It's about us together because it's always better when we do it together. One last little quote from Justice Kagan, then we're going to go to the lines. If you want to get in on this, we're talking about, listen, Congress adopts laws all the time that aren't sufficiently specific to tell exactly the executive branch agencies how to interpret the law and apply it to the infinite number of factual situations that come up. So regulatory agencies promulgate rules to fill those gaps. Who should decide how to fill those gaps? Unelected judges? Or should we leave it, in most cases, so long as they follow the note and comment period correctly, and they follow the substantive interpretation is reasonable and supported by their expertise's body of knowledge, we leave it in place. And if this ain't the right way to do it, why isn't the solution with the legislature? Why would the courts be wading into this? Let the legislature fix it if they don't like how rules and laws are being interpreted. We're going to go to the phone lines in just a second. Hang on there. Let me share this from Justice Kagan. She puts it really well. This is a quote from the oral arguments happening earlier today before the Supreme Court. This is Justice Kagan. Congress knows that there are going to be things that it writes that are just not going to be clear. How this will apply or what will it mean with respect to countless factual situations that this country will have to address? Does the Congress want this court to decide those questions? Policy-laden questions, technically-laden questions of artificial intelligence, for example? She went on, the issue we're deciding here is more like the countless policy issues that are going to confront this country in the years and decades ahead. Will courts be able to decide these issues as to things that they know nothing about? Courts that are completely disconnected from the policy and rulemaking process, from the political process, and that just don't have any expertise and experience in these particular areas that the agencies are regulating in. That's what this case is about. With that, let's go to the line. Susan from Madison, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. Who should be deciding? Does this worry you as much as me?
Of course it does. And actually, I would argue that when people talk about draining the swamp, what they want to do is take away the experts in the regulatory field that can really make these decisions and do the best by the people in this country. For example, I mean, I've had several businesses, and I can actually tell you that they change. For example, shrimp farms. You know, everybody thinks it'd be a good idea to have farm shrimp. Well, shrimp farms, it's like the Wild West. There aren't any regulations regarding this food that people like to eat and how they grow it, because everybody grows it differently. So if one were to have regulations about, you know, exactly how you can grow these shrimp so that they're the best quality for people who are ingesting them, because our wild-caught shrimp are no longer as easily accessible and we're overfishing, there are a lot of reasons to have regulations. And I think they help everyone because they allow people who have expertise in the field, who are really experts, to say, you know, going back to like PFAS, you know, PFAS is a thing that's rearing its ugly head all over. So I have a well, and I can now have it tested for PFAS. But before that, I didn't think I could, right? So we now know that we can test for PFAS. So I guess what I'm saying is, I'm sorry, I kind of going in a circle, that regulations are good, and I think that having regulations that are clear and that you can get through the permit processing period in an expedited, you know, in a good manner with thoughtful process works better. But I think what happens is we take away a lot of the people who are able to do the job, and we don't allow them to do their job, and then they become encumbered with all this paperwork. So, yep. Like you had said, clear, concise reasoning, what exactly are your expectations, and having the people that can review these quickly so people can get on with their life. And for example, as I met, if you want to have a fish farm or a shrimp farm, there'd be somebody there that can say, sure, you can do it, but these are the regulations that we have regarding shrimp farms, and this is what you feed them, this is how the water is supposed to be kept. So everybody has the same playing field, even if...
Yeah, that is exact. I think, Susan, you began and you ended in exactly the same spot. And I really appreciate your feedback. Thanks so much for the call, Susan. As a business owner, where there is a dearth or a lack of regulations, it incentivizes basically shady business practices. Now, not everybody will take advantage of regulatory gaps, but the last time I checked, as Wisconsinites, we like people to all play by the same set of rules. And we want those rules to work to both, yes, promote economic growth in businesses, but also to keep us all safe. This country's history is littered with massive regulatory failures. Big tobacco, opioids, PFAS, basically the entire food industry. Does anybody know what the heck is... I don't know what an ounce of sugar is, and yet that's what our food labels read. You want to know why that happened that way? Lobbying. I agree with Susan. The process can be inefficient. There can be too many regulations. Well, we should test the regulations, make sure they're actually doing what they should in an efficient and clear manner. But this is a separate, you know, we can talk about failures in regulatory systems. But fundamentally, the question that I'm interested everybody to answer for me today is, who should be deciding? Joanne from Madison, welcome back. What do you say this afternoon?
thanks for taking on these really complex issues. I'm going to be a little cynical for just a moment here. Weren't we all talking about some type of revolving door between the agencies, regulatory agencies in the U.S. and, of course, other countries as well, and the political life, but also the big businesses themselves? I don't know who's unsatisfied here with the situation. I thought that people would spend some time with the EPA and then maybe they'd work for a big business and capitalize on their know-how and expertise and then maybe even go back to that agency again. So again, I haven't heard the whole set of questions and answers and all of that from the Supreme Court, but I was wondering if that was brought up as a problem, an issue with this whole regulatory system that we have, that there is this revolving door system going that doesn't help anybody in the long run.
Yeah, it's a great question, Joanne. And true to form, like most lawyers and judges, we have these arguments in isolation without considering practical implications. That's a big practical implication. People are under a false impression that the federal government has robust regulations about the revolving door, about conflicts of interest, about exiting government, effectively being bought off by large businesses that you were previously responsible for regulating. Guess what happened in the opioids epidemic? They took basically the guy that was pushing regulations, and I won't get into all the technical stuff. I know a ton about this. Basically, Purdue Pharma went out and made him an offer he couldn't refuse, and he left the government. And then he started lobbying on behalf of Purdue Pharma. Shouldn't we just prohibit that? If you're at X, Y, or Z level, if you're directly responsible for rulemaking, guess what? 2 years, 1 year, some limitation on you can't go work for the industry that you just spent time regulating. It leads to too many conflicts of interest. Now, I will say, as someone who worked in the private sector before I entered government service, that my private sector experience was invaluable. When I entered government, I could see, oh, these things aren't being done in the state of the art or even close to a best practices way. It's inefficient. It's somewhat ineffective. I can help with that. So some interplay is good, but it should be transparent and people should be accountable and they shouldn't be subject to being bought off, in essence. That is indeed the problem. Ross from Soldiers Grove, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you say, sir?
Hi, Maggie. You're spot on, and this is such an important thing. I think that I don't really understand, to tell you the truth, why the Supreme Court took this. I read up on it, and apparently the case had something to do with fishermen that apparently the maritime industries, they wanted to have a way to ensure that fishermen were not taking too much fish. And so they had to have these monitors on these fishing boats. And then as time marched on, apparently, and this was a law that was put out by some of those eastern states, the requirement that the fishermen actually had to pay out of their pocket, the way that I understood it, for these observers to be on these boats. And so then they're kind of like, I think they brought this case, like, why should we as fishermen have to do this? I don't understand why this case doesn't just, why doesn't the Supreme Court just say, look, you can't make somebody pay for their own sort of, the thing I thought here in Wisconsin, I think of like Kewaunee County, which is kind of up there near Door County. And we have all these dairy operations. They call them confined animal feeding operations, CAFOs. Mm-hmm. And the water in Kewaunee County is polluted to the max.
Terrible.
To the point where residents have to, they actually have to get bottled water. And so if Kewaunee County were to look to the farmers and say, hey, look, you guys are polluting our water, you guys need to clean this up. Now I'm imagining what they're going to say is, oh, you can't burden us with the cost. You can't make us pay for it. And it's so weird because I'm thinking Kewaunee County is such a conservative part of the state, and here they are, you know, somehow they allowed themselves to create judges, to create these judges that are going to, in essence, protect these corporate farms. In Wisconsin, I think the issue is going to be like hog farms, dairy farms. It's going to be the guys that are making PFAS, these chemicals, and all these businesses and all these farmers are going to say, oh, it's too much. You can't expect us to pay for it.
Yeah, this is such a great call. Thanks so much, Ross, for all your input. Let me just a ton of really important stuff in Ross's comments. First of all, oftentimes regulation is about ensuring a level playing field among business interests while protecting the public from, I'm going to use an economics term here. Don't turn the dial. I'll explain what it means. While protecting the rest of us from the quote negative externalities of that particular business practice. This is a technical economics term. And what it means is, hey, farming is great. Livestock is great. I like to eat meat. But guess what? Having livestock creates manure and the runoff can pollute groundwater. That is a negative externality that unless regulation places the cost of that negative impact, which diffuses across an entire community, right? Unless a regulation can internalize that cost into the livestock production supply, which then passes the cost on to a consumer, the business effectively gets to abuse the water supply without properly factoring that into their business model. You get my drift? So this is a false sort of setup when people talk about regulations as bad for business. No. If creating an automobile that has no environmental regulations applied to it and produces huge amounts of CO2 and does this for decades and decades, and we end up with a hole in our ozone, that's a negative externality, and we all pay the price for that. So yes, regulations are also about how do we internalize some of these negative impacts that conducting business have? Such an absolutely critical concept. I'm going to say this to you before we go to these important messages. We're going to go back to the phone. Stay there. If somebody says it's simple, if they make it sound simple, I guarantee you it's a riddle. I'm Maggie Dawn. Call us, 844-967.
Smoking a lot of cigarettes lately, but inside it's just a little baby. Oh, it's okay to say you got a weak spot. You don't.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther. Give us a call this afternoon, 844-967-2789. You're also welcome to text. It's so much easier with the Civic Media app. You can do it with one click. We're talking about the regulatory state today. And what I'd like to offer you from my perch is that this discussion, this argument is extremely complicated. And it's not a partisan one. It's not about being pro-business or anti-business. That's stupid. I'll say that. It's about understanding how regulations impact all of us in different ways every day and every facet of our lives. And who do we want deciding? I don't want politicians deciding for the most part. Yes, it's a political process by which we enact laws. But once those laws are enacted, I don't want politicians deciding which particular amount of parts per billion of XYZ pollutant can be in my air because they don't know enough about that. I want experts doing that. I also don't want judges doing that. We're going to go to the phones. Tom from LA, my friend, how are you? I certainly hope it is warmer there than it is here.
It's kind of cold here too, Maggie. But anyway, we the people ultimately are the government and we must never forget that. You have the most brilliant callers. The last few callers, Joanne, and all of them are so great. And the gentleman that just called. Yeah, you're right. I mean, this whole thing comes right back down to what I've been talking about now for, 20 years. It's money and politics. And it is the lobbyist. And, you know, you have to ask, people have to ask themselves, would they want to have the Green Bay Packers playing a football game without any referees on the field?
Or rules.
Because.
Right. Or rules.
Right. Because I've seen where when the Seattle game happened with Green Bay and they had the scrub refs and Paul Ryan about losing his crap because of the call against Seattle. And I'm thinking to myself, you're the one that doesn't want any regulation at all. And you're the one that's yelling about the referees. So obviously we need referees. Obviously we actually can build more jobs when you do have regulation. But in terms of either Congress or the Supreme Court, I don't think we can have either of them decide anything right now with money and politics and with Citizens United. The latest conflict, and we're going to learn a lot tomorrow probably, with Justice Gorsuch. He's ready to hear a case that could benefit the billionaire Philip Anschutz, with whom Gorsuch had a personal and business ties spanning shared property and personal campaigns. This guy is a big funder for this whole thing with this fishing excursion. And we must remember, Neil Gorsuch's mother got kicked out of the Reagan administration because she wanted to destroy the EPA. So
yeah, it's really, I gotta cut you off there, Tom. I apologize. Chevron came about because Neil Gorsuch's mom was currently running the EPA at the time. There's a whole, as with everything, folks, I could peel back about five more layers of the onion and talk to you all about this for 4 hours because there are rabbit holes and we could go down all of them. Thanks so much for the call, Tom. I hope you are safe and sound out there. Thanks for listening, everybody. And I couldn't agree with Tom more. We have brilliant callers on this show. You make it better. We learn better together. It makes it so much more enjoyable for both Anya and I. Before I take my last caller of the day, and y'all aren't going to be surprised, I'm going to give my hat tip to Mark from Prairie du Sac. He's the most patient listener on the Civic Media Radio Network. I wanted to share these comments from Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson today, whom, in my opinion, speaks with the least amount of legal ease and is one of the most clear writers on the court today. She doesn't use these overly formalistic, overworded constructions. She just says it like it is. Here's Justice Jackson today. How does the court decide that it shouldn't make the call? I'm worried that the courts will become Uber legislators. Yeah, me too, Justice Jackson. I don't want unelected judges deciding what my clean water and air standards should be. I don't want unelected judges telling me how businesses should compete or regulating the financial markets. I don't want them doing that. They're insufficiently qualified. I don't want lobbyists deciding what those things should be. I want less money in politics, not more. I want ethics rules for Supreme Court justices. Don't we all? These aren't partisan issues. They're just regular people issues. And we agree more than we disagree. Mark from Prairie du Sac, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. You got last word of the day.
Yeah, thanks, Maggie. I was going to mention what Tom did about Neil Gorsuch, his mother, you know, that he was mad that his mother was forced out back when he was a teenager, and he was upset that his mother was getting forced out of the running the EPA during the Reagan administration because she's appointing too many people from industry into the EPA, and there's seen a conflict of interest there. And I wonder if, and maybe this is a stretch, but I wonder if we go back to Federalist 44, and this is applying to things that were not directly enumerated in the Constitution, what Congress could be allowed to do. And certainly Congress can't enumerate everything when they're writing the law, every toxin, every poison, every regulation that should be in place, by our regulatory agencies. It should be up to the subject matter experts, the scientists and statisticians and so on, that find out what the regulation should, reasonable regulation should be, because science is always finding something new. Who would have known about PFAS, 30 years ago, if it was poisonous or not? Well, maybe somebody in industry knew that it was
toxic. Yeah, Dow knew, actually. We found out Dow's known all along. But that's your point, Mark. Dow knows. I don't think a judge is going to know. Maybe the regulators will know. Thanks so much for the call, Mark. We got to wrap it up, everybody. Tomorrow, I'm going to talk about yet another Supreme Court case about basically making it illegal to be homeless. Can you believe that, given the weather going on? That's tomorrow on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But always remember, it's better when we stand together. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Maggie Dawn here on the Civic Media Radio Network.